Welcome to Help and Hope, a podcast of CCEF.
Thanks for joining us again this week on Help and Hope. My name is Andrew Ray, and I'm joined by
Winston Smith,
Chris Carter,
Tim Lane.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
This week we're going to talk about anger, and the question we receive goes like this: can anger become physically addicting? If physical addiction to anger is possible, how do we view and minister wisely to a person enslaved by anger?
Well, I'll say the controversial bit first, and you guys can make me sound better. I think emotions are physical events, right? Anger is a very powerful physical event. I mean, it's the rush of adrenaline. Mm-hmm. It's the surge of power, the surge of energy. And at a simple kind of physiological level, I guess you'd say, yeah, that could be addictive. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's the most addictive thing about anger. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's the stuff of the heart that makes anger especially attractive to us, and that's the stuff that the scriptures are warning us about when we talk about anger.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because anything that involves bodily aspects is just kicking in another layer of the struggle. And you want to appreciate that, you want to acknowledge that, when that adrenaline flows, when the face turns red, when you're raising your voice, there can be this sense of, okay, now I'm finally getting control over my universe. Mm-hmm. And there's a bodily piece to that, but it's rooted in more foundational things that are happening in the heart. But you want to appreciate that physiological component.
I mean, when I think about the stuff that goes on in my own heart when I'm angry, and this is not to say that anger's always and in every way sinful, but the typical ways that anger goes wrong is it directs me away from myself. When I'm the most angry, I'm usually thinking about other people's sins and not my own. So anger serves me in sort of protecting me from seeing myself clearly. I'm saying that in a sinful sense. And it just feels like it's such a nice alternative to the other things I might be feeling if I weren't angry. I don't want to say to my wife, "You hurt my feelings." That just feels so wimpy and pathetic. It's true. It happens to be true. I'd much rather be angry at her. You know what I mean? So, I mean, there's ways that it just, because of our sin nature, anger tends to be more appealing to us than the alternatives. Hurt, anxiety, fear, shame, guilt. It's an easy go-to emotion. That I think as men, our culture gives us special permission to major in anger.
Yeah, I've heard Ed Welch say that anger always thinks it's right. So it's that self-righteousness, and we can definitely become addicted to self-righteousness. I know myself.
R-A-M.
I can. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I was a real kind of the younger brother prodigal, ran away from the faith, partied really hard in college, came back, right, with so much grace that I cannot believe God still accepted me. And yet, I found myself being a Pharisee. I mean, going from like the grace, amazing grace, and then all of a sudden becoming self-righteous again. And it's like, how can I go there from there?
Right.
And yet, that's what Ed Welch says. Anger is constantly this, I'm right.
I think that's why one of the regular sort of admonitions of Scripture is you slow anger down. And one of the beauties of God's anger is that he's slow to become angry. So I just think, not to be simplistic, but if you want to give yourself one thing to do when you're feeling really angry, is you shut your mouth and you go really slow. Or Psalm 4 would say you lie on your bed and you're silent until you've brought it before the Lord and given some thought to it. And then anger can actually begin to do its work in the way that I think God designed it to do its work. Because obviously anger can't be inherently sinful, because God gets angry. The amazing thing is that God's anger actually solves problems. God's anger actually removes the barriers to loving relationship. and as His image bearers and as His children, I think our anger ought to function in the same way, but it's through this course of sanctification. But that means when I'm angry, I become prayerful. I get really slow. I talk less.
Yeah.
And I ask the Lord to help me. Let me be angry at my own sin first.
Yeah.
Before I start launching into the people around me.
But you're just picking up on the James passage. Be quick to listen.
Yeah, slow to speak.
Slow to speak, slow to become angry.
Yeah.
And we just flip it. Yeah. We get angry, we speak a lot, and we listen last.
Yeah.
Oh, have mercy, Lord.
And that Psalm 4 passage is actually cited in Ephesians 4, Paul is saying, don't let the sun go down
on your anger.
And it's interesting. When I was first married, I took that to mean, and my wife and I took it to mean, you know, we have to deal with all of our problems before the sun goes down.
Yeah.
And in actuality, when you look at what Paul is doing in citing Psalm 4, he's simply saying, no, deal with your own issues first.
Right.
And then, you know, deal with the issues between the two of you. And so we grew in our ability to say, hey, we're struggling in our relationship, but if we keep doing this to 1 and 2 and 3 in the morning, it's just going to spiral more.
And the person with the, you know, who can stay up later wins every time.
Well, as Phyllis Diller said, don't go to bed angry. Stay up and fight.
Uh-huh.
Who said that?
Phyllis Diller.
Oh,
well, that great philosopher
The
20th century.
Well, I thought
I
would invoke some.
To know. She was.
Man, what's interesting is Barbara and I would find that if we did that, we would actually be, you know, better prepared the next day to say, let's redress that issue. And sometimes we'd even wake up and say, why did we make such a big deal of that?
I know. A lot of times you wake up the next day and you're saying, I was an idiot.
You put the dish in differently than I would. That's what we got in a fight over. What was going on there? You know? So,
Chris, how about you and all of your foibles and weaknesses?
He's sitting here stewing right now. He's like so a volcano over here. So angry.
Yeah, I guess we could say this too about the question is, so yes, every part of the human experience in a certain sense is addicting. It captivates us. It enslaves us. This is biblical language through and through. And in light of that captivating slavery we have to so many things, we have a Christ who raises us out of that slavery. So I guess we could answer the questioner and say yes. In different ways, it is addicting, it is enslaving, and the story doesn't stop there. And there's an actual category to the human experience that belongs to God. It's covenantal, it's who we are as we live before the face of God and made for God.
Yeah.
And as we are brought back in to that part of our lives, it undoes the most enslaving and captivating categories that we'll ever experience. Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean it's easy.
Doesn't mean it's easy.
Right. Overcome anything with that addictive power is a long road. But you're absolutely right.
You know, we were talking about the more explosive anger, but you know, what about the more passive aggressive? You know, the person that tortures the other one by just shutting down and not talking and doing the cold shoulder. You see couples where you have one who's more expressive in their anger and the other one that's more quiet and passive aggressive, you put those two together on a bad day and it can really get nasty.
And that's a very typical kind of marriage pattern.
Right.
It can be this mutually reinforcing cycle where the angry person's pursuing the quiet, withdrawn person and they're withdrawing more and they just get locked in that cycle for years.
Yeah. Mm. And the more the passive aggressive one goes passive, the more animated the explosive person gets. Yeah. And it's not gender connected.
No.
You know? Right. What would we say? How would we want to help a couple like that?
Just labeling it accurately can be tremendously helpful. I mean, I think typically the person who's pouting, withdrawing, one of the reasons that they employ that strategy is because in some ways they're averse to identifying themselves as angry.
Right.
They may at some level feel that to be angry is to already lose or to be inferior or to be unchristian, so they can't afford to be angry. Mm. So they withdraw, they pout, or they even lapse into depression.
Mm-hmm.
I think accurately labeling things with some of the very straightforward, simple categories that the Bible gives us is a huge step in the right direction. So just helping somebody, just walking them through and say, what's going on with you? I mean, I can see you withdrawing. I hear you withdrawing. Getting them to talk about, just drawing them out so they talk about what's going on inside and just saying, that just sounds a lot like anger, you know, can suggest a whole new direction. Right. So now they're active in what they're doing.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And having to own the way they're responding, yeah. though very differently than the other person to the same stuff.
Yeah, and you can say you guys have the same problem. Right. You're both really, really angry, and you respond right. in really different ways.
And so you're actually presenting a growth agenda for both of them,
yeah.
not just one of them. Yeah, and the person that you typically have a growth agenda for is the one that's explosive. You yeah. can see
right.
that.
That's right. And they're going to get labeled the bad guy.
That's right. We're calling both of you to live in new and obedient ways as faith in Christ changes you differently for different reasons, but begins to create in the passive-aggressive one a more godly way of moving towards and engaging, mm-hmm. and in the explosive one, a way to, you know, be more patient and grow in their ability to not just react, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
but anger is not just an outward rage; it's an inward cage. That's the poet in me. But you know, it's
just, you just come beautiful. Up with that.
I did. Well, I'm thinking. I don't know if it was your class, Winston, one of my professors at CCEF said they had a man come in who hadn't spoken to his wife for months and months and months, had just done the silent treatment. Mm. And I think the professor had said that was one of the most frightening people they had ever...
Mm-hmm. To be able to go that long without saying
anything. Just deadpan.
Yeah.
And it just that sense of, We can fall off the cliff in anger in either direction, mm-hmm. and both have to be rightly directed. And as Chris said, just that a sense that the Lord can undo those things, that He can take our addictions for other things, our addiction to the power, the self-righteousness, and turn our hearts towards Him.
Think about the brutal messages in that kind of silence, mm-hmm. the unspoken messages of you are a non-person to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not just mad at you. It's I don't care about you. Yeah. You're
it's as if you don't exist.
I mean, that's like that's the worst kind of hatred. Actually, sometimes angry engagement at least suggests I care enough about what's going on to fight with you about it.
Yeah.
That kind of disengagement, it's like it's horrible.
This may be a bit off, but it reminds me of Ralph Ellison's book or novel called Invisible Man, and it's about race, and it's about just not being perceived as non-existence, mm-hmm. or not existing at all, invisible man.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that he's using that to capture the evil of racism, and you're saying in passive aggressive behavior you're actually doing that. You're treating someone as if they don't exist; they're invisible.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in, guys. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for joining us. For more information about CCEF and its resources, visit us on the web at ccef.org.